The issues that matter most, right here. The Drew Mariani Show
on Relevant Radio.
Russian President Vladimir Putin declared on Tuesday that Moscow will be suspending its participation in the New START treaty, the last remaining nuclear arms control pact with the United States, sharply ratcheting up tensions with President Biden over the fighting in Ukraine. Now, this comes after Biden's surprise visit to Ukraine ahead of his address in Poland. In Kyiv, Biden affirmed the United States' support for Ukraine during the war.
Freedom is priceless. It's worth fighting for as long as it takes. And that's how long we're going to be with you, Mr. President.
The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
Well, that was the President of the United States. These are, in my opinion, very troubling times. And I don't say that to frighten you in any way. I believe good always conquers evil. I was having a conversation yesterday with a friend who harkened back to the horrors of the Second World War and what we saw with Hitler's rise and the strange alliances with Italy, we had Japan, and so many others. And what a time of just, there was great evil in that time as well. Take a look at the concentration camps and the destruction of human life and what war ultimately brings. I'm concerned, and I just say this because I believe that we can mitigate things. Prayer can change things. Our Lady throughout the centuries has often come giving us the solution, asking us to pray the rosary, right? To do penance, to fast, to do what we can to ask God for his mercy. A lot of these things can be avoided. I think we're approaching a crossroad. I think we are on the threshold of a potentially much bigger conflict. And I pray to God that's not the case. I really do. But we'll talk a little bit about this today and in the days ahead with China now willing to support Russia in this conflict with Ukraine, if Russia wants to go into some of the neighboring nations, as you heard the president, I don't know if you heard all of his speech. I was listening to it the other day. He once again re-echoed what Article 5 of that UN Constitution talked about. And, an attack on one is an attack on all. That's troubling. That is really, really troubling. The Russian president, Vladimir Putin, announced yesterday that he's ending Russia's participation in the New START treaty with the U.S. And if you're not familiar with that, that was a treaty that was enacted in 2011. And according to the U.S. State Department, the two parties had until 2018 to, pair their nuclear forces down to what would be an agreed limit. And the treaty worked well. I mean, it worked really well. The treaty limits each state to no more than 1,550 nuclear weapons fitted with up to 700 missiles and aircraft. And Russia has more than 6,000 warheads on the standby, way more than we do here in the States. And the treaty says that, look, countries can't have more than 1,500 weapons fitted onto missiles. It doesn't say anything about not having more warheads, and it's part of the problem. So the State Department says both sides carried out their agreements, and a recent renewal was set to extend probably to February of 2026. So we had a couple more years on this. But Putin, as you heard yesterday, said that if the U.S. tests a nuclear weapon, they're going to start doing the same things. Putin met with Wang Yi. He's China's top diplomat in Moscow, and announced that Xi Jinping is also going to be visiting Moscow in the coming months. The two leaders are coming closer together, and mostly because of their mutual hatred of the United States and the West. China has claimed to be a neutral third party in the war between Russia and Ukraine. I don't really believe that, but they've also been vocally supportive of Russia. So U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken, he told Meet the Press that China's been providing non-lethal support to Russia during the war. Now, Maggie and I were talking right before the broadcast. Maggie, you had a chance to read Vladimir Putin's speech, or at least parts of it. And herein lies the rub, and maybe Maggie can just share just a brief synopsis of what went down. Vladimir Putin, in his speeches, he makes a case that the West really is dysfunctional and disoriented, especially when it comes to family. Maggie, you want to share just a little bit of that, what you're sharing with me? I think it was really telling.
Sure, yeah. I mean, it was hard to watch and not agree with him in certain ways. He was saying the West has given up themselves to depravity. They're idolizing debauchery, pedophilia, the gay agenda. And he said, you know, if you look at any sacred scripture, marriage is a man and a woman. And the crowd around him started applauding. And I was like, oh, this is very interesting. This is, you know, they're standing on some value here and trying to differentiate themselves from the business of what they're seeing the West is doing. I don't know. It was hard to watch.
Yeah, no, and that therein rub, you know, lies the rub, as I say. I mean, I think he's right. You know, in what, I totally disagree with the invasion of Ukraine. I totally disagree with what happened, of course. But to his point, clearly, you take a look at the gender mutilations, gender confusion that's running rampant in this country. You take a look at what we're teaching our children. You take a look at just the incredible disorientation that we have right now and the loss of morality and ethics in this nation. I think some of the things he highlights should be a wake-up call for us. We should take a look at that and say, you know what? He's right on this. And he makes a strong case for it. It's hard to argue against. All we can do right now, though, is pray. Today's Wednesday. It's Ash Wednesday. It is a day in which we begin Lent and our Lenten journey. A little bit later, I'll talk to you maybe a little bit more about praying and fasting in particular for America. I hope you make this part of your Lenten resolution. In addition to whatever you're sacrificing, giving up, whatever you are doing to amplify your prayer, let's together be an army of prayer warriors. Let's defend freedom and patriotism and family and life, and let's do it with our prayers, all right? Let's do that together. Make that part of your campaign throughout this year, okay, throughout the next 40 days at least. And I believe prayer changes things. I say it all the time. I really do. I see it all the time. I see the fruit of it. I see the miracles that come from it. I see the power of it, and I want you to believe that as well. I want you to know that as well. I want you to see that. Your prayer is going to have a profound impact on a much larger scale. You know, you're not limited to your own sphere. You can impact the world with your prayers. So this Lent, let's do that, and I'll be joining you in that. And I'm going to have faith and trust in God. Today's also the anniversary of the day the Lord gave the image to Divine Mercy, the image of Divine Mercy to St. Faustina. And I'll talk to you about that coming up, too, because this is something you need to have in your home, and we should ask the Lord for his divine mercy, for his protection over this country. Walgreens, CVS, Rite Aid. Right, we talked about them the other day. They're all applying to be allowed to sell abortion drugs. All three of them are the focus of pro-life protests. Remember last Valentine's Day, last week or whatever the date is. How long ago was that? It was about a week ago, right? They're coming under a lot of pressure. Well, guess what happened in the state of Kansas? And I think this is the part of prayer. I think we're praying, and this is part of the fruit of it. We're asking God to protect this country, to convert hearts, to end this culture of death. Well, the state attorney general, Chris Kobach, has written to all, all of them warning that if they sell the drugs in Sunflower State, they're going to be ending up violating federal and state laws. So in a response letter, Walgreens chief legal officer said, hey, we're okay. We're not going to sell the drug in Kansas. So the state of Kansas, and thank God for that, you know, because I said, you know, I wouldn't use Walgreens. I wouldn't use CVS. I wouldn't use Rite Aid. I wouldn't use anybody who promotes this stuff. There's other pharmacists. Support them, right? Well, good for you, Walgreens. I want to commend you. You know, I highlighted you, so I want to say bravo. You know, I'm glad you're not going to ship it and you're not going to sell it. So it is a win-win, which is good. It's a good, you know, for the state. It's good for life. It's a good for all of us. So let's thank the Lord for that as well. I don't know where you live. You know, the poor state of Illinois, my heart goes out to them. You know, you talk about Chicago. If you're overseas, I mean, there's travel warnings about Chicago. So many people are being shot, all these other problems. Well, if you're a citizen of this country, this should be alarming to you. There's a new report out that says not one, not two, not even three, four, five, six, a dozen or two dozen or three dozen or four dozen schools in the nation, but 55 schools. In our country's third largest school system reported that none of the students have a proficiency in math or reading. 55 schools. And I just want to repeat that because you're saying, what did he say? None of their students have any proficiency in math or reading. Not one student in 55 schools. I said, that can't be right. I don't believe that. School officials, of course, are blaming COVID. But it was the response to COVID that really made it that way. I'm going to dive into that story a little deeper. I find that shocking. And if it's Chicago, I'm sure it's happening in other states around the union as well. But this is not good for the future of the country. If reading and math proficiency is down, we are falling behind on the global scale. We cannot afford to do that. If you want a brighter future, you want a strong America, we need to make sure that those numbers stay high. The group Catholic Action for Faith and Family, they sent out a booklet to all their Catholic deacons. And this is a story we've talked about in the past. And when the elections come up again, I'm sure we'll talk about whether or not politicians like Joe Biden or Nancy Pelosi or people who are so adamant in supporting advancing the culture of death should receive Jesus Christ, who is truly present in the Eucharist, right? And a lot of people say, why aren't the bishops doing more? Why aren't they saying no, right? Well, this booklet went out to priests and bishops in the United States and deacons as well on denying communion. And the booklet was authored by, guess what? Not just somebody on the sidelines saying, oh, I wish we would not give these politicians communion. It was issued by a high-ranking cardinal in the Catholic Church, Cardinal Raymond Burke, the preeminent expert on the subject. So this is pretty big news. How it's going to be received within the church, how it'll be executed, I don't know. It's based on a paper he wrote back in 2007 for an academic canon law journal detailing what the church is teaching on, you know, what the church is teaching and tradition was on the subject. And I'll just go ahead and I'll give you one quick quote from him. He says, no matter how often bishops or priests repeat the teachings of the church regarding procured abortions, if he stands by and does nothing to discipline a Catholic who publicly supports legislation permitting the gravest injustices and at the same time presents himself to receive communion, then his teachings ring hollow. And I could not agree with him more. I want to say bravo to him. We'll talk much more about this, of course, I promise you, in the days ahead. It's going to be a big, big story. And again, I always try to bring us back to something. It sounds like a broken record, but pray for Joe Biden. Pray for our president. Pray for so many Catholics who hold position, so many celebrities, so many others who can influence, that they can be passionate about their faith and hold true to the teachings of the church. I think that is really, really key. Hey, I want to jump over a little bit early today to Dr. John Littell. Now, if you tune into my show, if you listen to this broadcast, you know I try to give you a look at life that you don't get anywhere else. And I don't say that in a vain way. I really don't. I say that because I really am trying to be honest with you intellectually about what's happening in the culture, what's happening in the world, and I'm hoping that you'll be able to get that here. You know, when you tune in, you say, okay, he's not trying to sell me on stuff. He's just trying to keep me informed. Dr. John Littell had warned, and I'll be honest with you, I thought the guy I thought he was wrong. When he first came on the air and he shared with me that he thought that masks, right, were not effective. And I thought, masks not effective? What are you talking about? For 3 years now, the medical establishment's been pushing the idea that we need to be wearing masks in, you know, one kind or another to help stop the spread of COVID-19. And you probably will remember at first, Dr. Anthony Fauci, he poo-pooed the whole idea of masks, right? Mostly because I think part of the reason that they said, masks aren't any good, and this is why I didn't totally buy it, there was a shortage of PPP there was a shortage of so much of the stuff for medical officials. And he didn't want the vast number of Americans, after they ran out and cleared shelves of toilet paper, depleting the supply of masks, right? Care workers. So he changed his mind a little bit later. And the medical establishment and the government figures, you know, they went along with him. And now suddenly we went from him saying, you don't really need masks, to there being mandates in place, right? Mandates, even for little children, even though the virus did not have an impact on them as it did everyone else. So there was a recent study that just came out. I think you'll appreciate this. It was in the highly regarded Cochrane Review, and it went through just a number of studies to see what are the effects of wearing masks. You know, what effect does that have? You know what the author's conclusion was? More than likely, not much, if at all. You know, and I say more than likely because, look, the studies the authors reviewed had different weaknesses. But even with those weaknesses, there was no evidence that they had a positive impact on stopping the spread. This was a shocker. I mean, all those studies, they weren't just, is a cloth mask true? Was it neck gaiters? Oh, come on. Are you telling me the surgical mask? Here's the shocker for me, my takeaway, and I'll get Dr. Littell's take on this. It was about the N95s and the P2 respirators as well. And again, I'll give a public apology to Dr. John Littell. When he first came on 2 years ago or 3 years ago, we were talking about whether or not mass works. And, oh, no, Drew. I thought, oh, come on. They have got to do something to mitigate to some degree. He was proven right by this study, clearly. He joins me today. He's the author of the book, The Hidden Truth, Deception in Women's Healthcare. You can find him at johnlittellmd.com. And you can join us right now if you want to get in on the conversation at 888-914-9149. Doctor, good to have you back. Good afternoon.
Wow. Always good to talk to you, Drew. And I just appreciate you giving me the opportunity over these last couple of years, at least to try to get some common sense out there in a medical profession that has increasingly rejected common sense. And science for that matter. But let's talk.
And first of all, I remember when you first came on the air, we're in the heart of COVID, everybody was scrambling to get masks, you couldn't get them. I remember I ordered some from, I guess it was overseas, they never showed up, it was months and months and months, and I thought, masks have got to do at least something, but you didn't even want to wear them in the hospital, walking down the halls. I know you took a lot of heat for that. First of all, congratulations. What do you make of this study? Because they seem to really support everything you said, and the surprise for me was those N95s. I thought, okay, it's every other mask but the N95. You were kicked out of a hospital board, too, and I want to talk about that. But give me your take on the mask first.
Well, yeah, the masking, and you're right. What I did in the hospital setting was, and in fact, I was kicked out of a lot of different things for not wearing a mask. But the one thing I always insist on doing is when I walked into that patient room, I took my mask off. Mm. And I have known from the beginning that this was nothing but theater. But theater. It was obvious to anyone who had common sense that this was theater. By the way, the politicians were putting them on in certain places and taking them off, and others, the governor of California, you name it. You go to Fauci at the ball games. You go down the list of the people who said wear a mask and then were inconsistent with their behavior because they knew they were the social engineers who were trying to get all of us to change how we live. And the saddest part, I had a lady today who came in again with a mask on. I said, I need you to take that mask off and I want to see your face. I want to see what's going on. I finally talked her off. It's like talking someone off the ledge from committing suicide. I got the mask off her face. She felt so relieved to have a doctor who would actually look at her and see her smile. Well, tell me, let's turn the coin on that or flip the other side of the patients in the rooms, children especially, but anyone, all you're doing is walking in with this garb on, especially the mask. You never see a smile. And, of course, in education, I heard you talking earlier about education, the teachers and the kids with masks on. So all of this was surreal, and all of this was unnecessary, and all of this was tragic for our children and for people in hospitals. And to this day, it still happens in many states right now as we talk, where the nurses are wearing masks because they're taking care of patients, and they don't need to be, and the docs.
So let me do this. I'll grab a quick call or two. And if you want to join us, 888-914-9149. Elijah's in Lexington, Kentucky. And there still is controversy over whether or not we need to wear these in our dentist office or go shopping with them when somebody's sick or even during COVID. Elijah works in a surgical room. I want to get him in to get his take. Maybe you can answer this question. Elijah, thanks for calling in. You're on the air with Dr. Littell.
Hello?
Yeah, hi, Elijah. Go right ahead.
Yes, doctor. I had worked in the surgery room, and during operation, we wore mask, head cover, shoe cover, gown. We scrub our hand for 7 minutes with disinfected. Mm-hmm. Everything was sanitized and sterilized to minimize the transmission of bacteria and viruses. Is that accurate?
Yeah, great question. I actually did many assist on surgeries for C-sections for years and actually some of my own patients. And yes, we did that whole drill. Obviously, we know that hand washing and wearing masks. The main reason you wear a mask in surgery is to prevent you from coughing or sneezing into the open wound in the patient. That's the only reason that makes any sense. You are not stopping the transmission. If you're walking in there as a surgeon with 102 fever and influenza or any other respiratory illness, wearing that surgical mask is not going to prevent anyone in that room from getting sick. Not at all. you're doing that to prevent your hands, your dirty hands, from getting into a wound and contaminating the wound, or if you cough or sneeze, that's all that surgical mask is preventing. And you can imagine what that would be like. You know, you don't want that going into an open wound. So, yeah, I'm thankful that you all do that. In fact, the surgeons do stay clean when they go into operating rooms. Yeah. But we're talking about people walking down hallways of hospitals and in and out of patient rooms to say hi to a patient, and at no with no conceivable risk of getting either one sick, the patient or the person walking into the room, or basically the mask didn't do anything to obviate that risk. Let's put it that way.
Elijah, thanks for the call. I'm going to leave it right there with you just because I only have a few minutes with the doctor today. And I do want to get to a couple other issues here today. Before we get back to the study, Maggie and I were talking right before the program about how, and just fill me bring me up to speed on this. I don't know all the details, but you were actually kicked out of a hospital board meeting last night because you spoke out about the use of ivermectin on thousands of patients who had COVID. This is another area, in addition to the mask, where you had kind of a, well, you had a very different perspective than others. What happened? Were you escorted out by police? I mean, what did you say that was so threatening?
No, it's a sad truth that the hospital had a chance to fix this problem yesterday and chose not to. Sarasota Memorial Hospital, actually an excellent hospital in general. I mean, one of the best in the state of Florida. So I even told them that. I had 3 minutes to speak, and I spent at least 30 or 40 seconds telling them how good a hospital they were. And so I didn't realize they would count that as my time. But in the 2.5 minutes that I had to speak after driving 2.5 hours from Ocala to Sarasota, I tried to summarize what the experience was of my patients in the hospital who were denied treatments and those who received treatments and then those who were isolated, et cetera, et cetera. I was cut off, obviously, at the end. I couldn't say what I needed to say except at the end, near the end of the board meeting, after the public comments, I went up to one sympathetic board member who was on the edge of the conference table as I was getting ready to leave, and I just knelt down, whispered in her ear, "I appreciate your support. I would love to say more, and please call on me if you ever can." I had a tap on my shoulder. Next thing you know, there's one cop, and then a second, and then a third security person, very tall, imposing. You know, it could have been just sit down, Dr. Littell. I didn't get that. I was asked to leave the room.
Wow.
I was escorted down the hallway, not just out of the hospital, off the premises, onto a street corner in Sarasota. I was not allowed to be on hospital property. And then one interested reporter, you know, followed me out and interviewed me about what had happened. But if you watch any of that, it's kind of gone crazy. I don't do Twitter, by the way, thank God. I don't have time for Twitter handle. I just basically wanted them to hear the voice of the voiceless, these people who were abandoned and never had a chance to have an advocate while they were in hospitals during COVID. And I even told them, if you want to be the best hospital in Florida or in the country, you should be the first to admit the wrong that you did during COVID. We all know there were mistakes made, but if you expect any hospital employee doctor to step out through and say we did wrong, you know, when Morgan and Morgan's are around the corner or any other lawyer trying to sue people, you know, you're not going to get any doctor but me coming down because I'm an independent lawyer. I'm an independent doctor. I'm not under the thumb of any hospital system, so I can speak freely. That is a very rare breed these days.
My guest today is Dr. John Littell. Doctor, I don't know how busy you are. You have a few more minutes on the other side. I have to take a short break. I'd like to pick up on a couple other things if you got some time. Oh, Karen in Las Vegas, we'll take your call on the other side. If you want to join us, Dr. John Littell is here. We're addressing a new study that proved that so many of these masks were ineffectual. There is a report I saw, Doctor. Maybe we can address this when I return. I think I was watching PBS NewsHour or something last night. I tend not to watch that, but I was surfing the channels, and they talked about avian flu, how so many of the birds are now dying. And it seems to have leapt to other mammals. There's been some seals and others that have died. And the question is, could it leap to humans? And could we see another pandemic? This is how the Spanish flu in 1918 began. I'd love to get your take on that. We'll take a few more of your calls. And we'll be back with more right after this.
Your news. The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
Your news now.
Today's programming is brought to you by St. Gregory Recovery Center in Iowa. More information about their faith-centered addiction treatment is available at relevantradio.com/stgregory.
The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
Make a one man weep, make another man sing. Change your heart.
Well, thanks for joining me. It's good to be back here with you today. If you're just tuning in, I stumbled across a study that really was a little bit of a shock to me. And, well, not really. I guess yes and no. It was a shock in this respect. You know, we've talked about masking for a long time during COVID-19. And there was a number of studies that were done. They looked at everything from cloth masks and neck gaiters to surgical masks and N95s and P2 respirators. And this highly regarded study said that the effects of wearing masks, they said it was relatively ineffectual. My guest today, Dr. John Littell, was saying that during COVID. And, you know, I was one of those people who thought, really? I find that hard to believe. But he was right. The study proves it out. And doctor, it's good to have you back with us today. We're just taking a look at the masks and also really how people are treated. Maybe we can pick up on that point. There seems to be a lack of compassion in particular for the patient when it comes to this.
Well, Drew, here's what happened with COVID. I was chief of staff at a very large hospital in the Orlando area for several years. And there was they rolled out something called the patient experience, where doctors were actually encouraged even to sit in hospital beds and certainly to, you know, at themselves and play the role of the patient, to feel what it, see what it felt like to be in a hospital bed. And then when you visited your patients, to sit on the beds with them and hold their hands and talk to them. This was all 5, 6, 7 years ago. Then COVID happens. All of a sudden, we gave blanket permission for hospitalists all over the country not to not sit on their beds, but not even to go in the rooms of patients who had COVID, to say, oh, you can round on your phones now. We'll give them a phone. You can talk to them. Or you can do television stuff. And then the mask, as I talked about earlier, you took patients and you denied them any relationship whatsoever with any healing presence whatsoever, including the sacrament of healing, including the sacrament of healing. Who was to blame for that? Our own church, frankly, that did not step up and insist that we needed to bring sacraments to those who were dying. All right, I get emotional. So here's the deal. We shut down churches, Drew. We shut down playgrounds. We masked children. I saw this happening. We all saw this happening, Drew, and nobody said anything. Wow. And so, you know, yesterday was hard for me because it was a little bit of PTSD. And I shared with everybody that, you know, this was the biggest war of my life. I was in the military for 7 years. It has never been harder. And we got to come together. And I'm so happy that you and Relevant Radio are, you know, on the right side with us.
I think emotion. I'm glad to hear it. It shows where your heart is and how passionate you are about this. And yeah, I always just want to be on the right side of the issue. I just want to bring truth. You know, maybe I'm wrong when I see something initially. If the truth pervades, I want to say, hey, I was wrong. And here's the reality of it all. You never gave up, even under heavy fire. And I'm grateful for that. You were passionate, and I could hear it in your voice too, about the harm that this policy may have done even to kids. Did this masking, because I shared a report before you came on about Chicago schools, 55 of them, 55 mm-hmm. schools in the Chicago area are showing a deficiency in math and reading. And I'm figuring it's not just Chicago. There's got to be other schools, New York, California, you name the place. Kids were masked, development, you know, especially very young children, had to affect them. What was the impact of this government mandate on masking on the educational system and on our children?
Lasting, absolutely lifelong lasting. You take a child in 5th, 6th, 7th, second, third, any grade, and you have them not learn effectively for 1 year. A short example is my own son, my youngest of 5, 7th grade. He missed almost the entire school year at that school, Catholic school, because they put up shower curtains between the desks. All right. Yeah. And so they wouldn't have to wear masks. So I was not going to send my child to a shower curtain to Catholic school. All right. We took him home. We tried our best to teach him. I'm working like a dog during COVID, as you know, and everyone in my family was stressed. So it was really, and I see now as he's finishing 8th grade, the deficiencies that he has because he couldn't master the basic concepts of algebra well. I was not able to teach him. I was too busy working my rear end off. So, and my wife does her best, but she's, you know, homeschooling is not for everybody. God bless them if they can do it. So God bless your homeschoolers. They're the ones actually who came through with flying colors, by the way. I take care of lots of them. Yeah. They had it figured out. They were ready made for COVID. But no, the learning definitely we can go on, but it's obvious you could not have a kid learn with a mask on their face.
If you want to join us, my guest today is Dr. John Littell. I only have him for a few more minutes, maybe 10 more or so. If you want to get in, it's 888-914-9149. Let's go to Karen. She's been waiting in Las Vegas to join us. Karen, hi. You're on the air with Dr. Littell.
Hi, Dr. Littell. I have a question because I think we've been duped completely by COVID, including the vaccine.
Well, thanks. That's a very short question with a very short answer. You're absolutely right. Yeah, we've been duped by those vaccines. They never should have been allowed in the street, in the pharmacy, in the wherever you're getting them, because it was put under a false emergency use authorization because they took away the possibilities that we had of treating early with hydroxychloroquine and then ivermectin. They came up with sham studies that were poorly done and intentionally poorly done. And so the only way you can get an EUA, emergency use authorization, if there's no effective early treatment for a disease, which we had. We did not have it for polio. We did not have it for, you know, other epidemics in the past, some of the influenza epidemics, but we had it for COVID-19, particularly Alpha and Delta variants. So I'm just telling you, it's a hard thing to wrap your head around. When I was at the Sarasota meeting yesterday, and some lady in her late 70s, at the end of her little two-minute testimony, said, "Have you ever heard of the Great Reset?" And I was so happy to hear some lady that age who knows about this.
Right.
It's a real deal, man.
I want to go back to the phones before I do, though, quickly. I mean, I was watching, as I said, a news report last night. They did a whole thing on the avian flu, and it's really quite problematic, the amount of birds that have been killed. And now they are reporting, it was two different species. One was, I think, seals. It was mammals, where the avian flu leapt and infected them. It's still a couple of jumps away, perhaps, from infecting humans. But I, if I remember correctly, the 1918 Great Spanish Flu that killed tens of millions of people the world over, it started as an avian flu. I'm curious, because what they're talking about, you're talking about vaccines right now. There are pharmaceutical companies right now looking to preempt perhaps a jump of avian flu, and they're going to try to come up with some new vaccines in the event this does make the leap. What do you know about the avian flu and its possibility of jumping? I know it's pretty remote. And what do you make of, you know, pharmaceutical companies now saying, "Hey, we're going to do this preemptively so we can, you know, cut this off"?
Well, I'll tell you, I had just enough time before I got on the air to discuss this with a virologist who's very influential. He was actually in the Trump White House. He did inform me that this is the first time that they've been able to document that avian flu being transmissible from mammal to mammal. I'm not sure if you've heard about the sea lions in Peru, 500 dead sea lions from avian flu. So there is a real threat that this might emerge. Now, clearly, this is not, no one knows how this has happened. We're not tracing this to some lab in some country. But you can be sure that the pharmaceutical company will be the first, or the vaccine will come up with something. I think one thing you do need to be aware of, they already have come up with for next winter a vaccine for adults against RSV. I need to make it very clear to everyone listening that RSV is not a disease of adults by any stretch imaginable, not a serious disease. It's a cold. But they're going to capitalize on the RSV vaccines. They're going to capitalize on fear. And so, you know, maybe this is a real deal with the avian flu. Maybe it won't be. It's something we need to keep watch on. That's why this particular virologist and others is very aware of the emerging medical threats. Whether this is going to be a form of biological warfare or something, we don't know. We don't know. But we need to keep our eye on it.
There's strange times. I'll tell you, wars and rumors of war, strange diseases and plagues. It's something out of scripture. It's crazy. Let's grab a few calls. 888-914-9149. I'll get you right into the conversation. My guest today, Dr. John Littell. Richard's listening in Plainfield, Illinois. Good afternoon, Richard.
Hi there. What's happened to me is because of my employer, United Airlines, they forced us to take the shots. So right now, I am no longer working for them. And so I took the four shots.
Mm-hmm.
And since then, I have had COVID now three different times.
Wow.
So can the shots actually give you COVID?
No. Sorry you had to go through that ordeal. I'm not vaccinated. I'm thankful of that. But I think what we're seeing is that, we know the most COVID cases, the COVID cases I have been seeing for the last 6 to 12 months are people who've been vaxxed. I haven't seen a single case in somebody let me correct myself. When I talk about a case, first of all, you've had sicknesses like COVID, but you're on the phone with me and you sound pretty darn healthy. You feel pretty good today?
Do you feel good today, Richard?
Is he there?
He's there, yeah. Richard, go ahead. Is Richard still there? Maybe we
yeah.
lost him.
Yeah, okay. I'm still
Richard, are you healthy now?
Yes, I am healthy now.
Okay, I need to make the point that everyone who's listening needs to hear. You could test positive. You could have a test for COVID. You could have a cold, but I don't really care anymore. I mean, I'm sorry you've had those colds. You've had those, but it didn't kill you. It wasn't like the Alpha and the Delta. That said, you know, even though I had natural immunity to the Delta variant because I was exposed to it day in and day out and never got it, okay, I got many doses. I still got the Omicron variant later on. It was like a cold. I haven't tested myself at all. So can I say two things? Don't bother testing yourself if all you have is a cough and a sore throat. And if you have the coronavirus, it's been around for eons, even before human beings were around. It's COVID. It's coronavirus. What was unique about Alpha and then Delta is that they were what we've called a weaponized variant. The spike protein was altered. We all know where that was altered. And that's what you need to be aware of. So please don't anyone out there worry anymore right now about COVID. We need to move past COVID. We've got other things to think about.
Yeah, well, Doctor, I'm grateful for your time today. So many calls here. I mean, before I wrap this up, there's a doctor in Los Angeles who says there's such a mess in the medical field, and unfortunately, we're now in the situation. He's asking, how do you change the medical field, and where do people go from here? And some final thoughts from you.
Wow. How do you change the medical field? It's going to take a lot of courage on behalf of a lot of doctors, nurses, and others, and hospital administrators. Who are the hardest ones? That's the hardest ones. But come to their knees and realize what happened was wrong, mm-hmm. and actually come to the table. Come to the table in a spirit of openness and communicate and say, listen, guys, what did we do wrong? What can we do better next time? And how can we had no conversations during COVID. I was shut down. I was kicked out of meetings. I couldn't have a talk about basic science, pathophysiology, pharmacology. So that communication, that conversation has to happen if medicine is to survive. Otherwise, people won't trust anyone. And they have to, secondly, listen to the patients. When patients are doing their own research, dang it, a lot of those patients know a lot more about a lot of things than I do anymore. Because you guys are all getting pretty smart out there.
That's so true. Dimphnia, who's in Boston, Mass., says that she's a nurse, strongly agrees with the doctor. She says this whole thing has been horrendous. Hey, doctor, thank you for being here. We'll have you back. I always enjoy our conversations together. Your website, John Littell, it's two T's, two L's. JohnLittell.com. I know people can track you down there. And The Hidden
John
Truth
Littell,
is available
MD,
there, too?
MD. Yeah, JohnLittellMD.com.
Gotcha.
Yeah, I'm having to revamp it right now because of all the hits on there. I'm doing my best in between patients with other people. Help me. Yeah, get the book, The Hidden Truth. It was a start. I wrote that before COVID, and it tells you a lot about how I feel about medicine.
That's JohnLittellMD.com. Doctor, we'll catch up again. Thanks for the time. Appreciate it.
God bless you. Keep praying, Drew. Be well.
You got it, brother. When I return, I heard an unbelievable story about a young boy who was trapped in rubble. I'll tell you his story. He claimed a mysterious figure came and fed him. I'll fill you in on this. Daria Little will be stopping by. Powerful conversion story from Islam to Catholicism. You'll hear that and much more. Stay with me.
Wish you could hit rewind on that convo? Listen to the podcast on relevantradio.com or anywhere podcasts can be found.
This hour is sponsored by Creative Planning. How is your Catholic faith influencing your financial future? More info, including disclosures at creativeplanning.com/Catholic Focus.
The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
Well, wait till you hear this story. You know, we've been praying for victims of the earthquake in Turkey and Syria. I just cannot imagine the misery and the suffering of the people in that in those nations. I think the number I saw was 44,000 or 47,000 people lost their lives. On Monday, I reported to you that there was another magnitude. I think it was 6.3 that took place, kind of a follow-up to that one. There's a fascinating story that came out recently from Turkey of a five-year-old boy who was found alive in the rubble. He was buried for over 198 hours. Now, look, you really don't survive without water more than 3 days, right? He's a five-year-old child. He's not even first grade. He was under the rubble for 8 days without food, without water. So a French organization called SOS Christians of the East, they shared his story. When he was rescued, rescuers said to him, how did you survive? What happened? You were trapped under here. And this little boy says that a person dressed in white fed him, brought him water, and then disappeared. I don't know about you. That certainly sounds like Jesus showed up, right? Was he miraculously saved? Could have been a saint too. I don't know. I just know that there was divine intervention. This young man must without question have a great mission in life. And for years, there have been these stories of Jesus appearing to individuals, Muslims in Muslim-dominated countries in the Middle East and in Africa and a lot of other places that are claiming that Jesus is coming to them, teaching them the faith, inviting them into a closer relationship to with him in through Christianity, ultimately the Catholic Church. Daria Little is a convert from Islam. She was born and raised in Turkey. She was a Muslim, found herself as an atheist as a teenager, began searching, and eventually made her way to Christianity and ultimately to her home in Catholicism. She wrote a great book. If you want to read it, it's From Islam to Christ, One Woman's Path Through the Riddles of God. And you can learn more by going to her website. It's DariaLittle.com. She joins me now. Daria, good afternoon. Thanks for joining me.
Oh, thanks for having me, Drew. Thank you.
But it's so amazing, that story of that little boy trapped for 8 days, right? And being miraculously fed and given water by a man who would come and then disappear. And there's these reports all throughout the Middle East and Africa. I spoke to one young man. His name was Emmanuel Segastasha, who was picking beans in a field one day, and Jesus appeared to him and told him things of a higher theological and intellectual level. He had no formal education. He went to the bishop, and it convinced him of the authenticity of this, and he became a Christian and a Catholic as well. Your thoughts on what's happening, what the Lord is doing, and then maybe share a little bit of your story. We only have about 8 minutes for you today, but I'd love you to unpack all that.
Sure. I think one of the reasons the Lord does it is there's very little missionary efforts in Muslim countries now. And obviously, it's very hard soil. The gospel doesn't spread easily. These are very close countries. And again, especially in the last century, there's very little Catholic missionary efforts. Protestants are a lot better. But when we are not willing to preach the gospel, the Lord will find a way to reach the people. He'd rather do it, of course, with our, our participation. But he's going to get things done. I'm sorry,
that's quite okay.
My baby's fussy.
That's fine.
But I mean, even in you will hear a lot of similar stories. And I think another reason is that in these countries, people really believe in the meaning of dreams and visions. They're a lot more open to these supernatural interventions, not as cynical as most people are in the West. So I think it's a great way to lead people. Like even in my case, I was an atheist. When I converted in Turkey, but I couldn't take the final step because, as you said, people lose a lot when they become Christian. And I mean, it's not always a matter of life and death. In my case, it wasn't. But I knew I would lose friends back then, fiance, family pressures. You can't find a job. It's just there are just so many things to be worried about. So I couldn't make it a final step. And the Lord, even as an atheist, sent me a vision to kind of push me over that, push me over that line. And like in my case, he knew that a dream wouldn't have worked because I would have kind of brushed it off. But a vision that is like showed me what I was doing wrong was very powerful.
Daria, let me stop you on that point. That's fascinating. What was the vision? And what was it like? What was that encounter like? I think of, Saul on his way to Damascus being struck down and how Christ often comes. What was your experience?
I was not struck blind, thankfully. I appreciated that. Thank you, Lord. But amen. I was really worried about this worldly stuff, like, friends, as I said, jobs, this and that. And then he showed me that compared to the gift he's offering, compared to the eternity, all this stuff I worry about on this world, they're nothing. So basically that was it. And I think that supernatural intervention. And it was very brief. It lasted for like 10 seconds maybe. But I think it's something that one can also hold on for a long time. Like, yes, you know, when doubt comes, hardships come, and then you always go back to that point that the Lord, you know, revealed himself to you so openly. So I think that's the beauty of it. Like, it's just such a strong and vivid point in one's life. Like, you know, I'm sure St. Paul went back to that often as well. So I think that's the impact of it. You know?
So what's happening with Christians? Are there? I have a friend who he knows. I worked with him to do a film many years ago called Marrying Apparitions of the 20th Century. He wants to reach the world with this message, and he really believes it's the Islamic community that we have to address. Jesus, Our Lady's appeared in a place called Zaytun, visible to a quarter of a million people in the 60s, late 60s, it was 1968 when that happened. Now he's coming in dreams and visions to many, many people who are converting. What's happening with the faith out there? Because we know what Islamic law is all about. Are these Christians facing opposition, persecution? What's happening to them?
I mean, I the people I know personally, they are practicing their faith in a secret, basically. And some of them, they have to flee the country for their lives. But one learns to kind of keep one's head low, basically. So they learn how to fly under the radar. And I mean, it's much harder in countries like Saudi Arabia, for instance, than, you know, maybe Turkey or Lebanon, or, you know, it really depends on what country you live in. But I think you're right that the Lord is doing something, and it's going to come, you know, whether, again, we participate or not. But in terms of when we talk about a natural disaster like this, which seems so meaningless and awful, I can't even bring myself to watch the videos. But then I started to pray that maybe the Lord will use this as a point to start an awakening for, you know, so that more people will come to know him. So I think maybe that's one thing we can all pray, that he will use this awful suffering time to reveal himself more to Muslims.
It speaks about the time in which we live in, though, doesn't it? It's really quite amazing. Well, Derry, I want to get people connected to you because I only have a moment or two left. I know you wrote your story down, and if someone is interested, you want a good read, check out From Islam to Christ, One Woman's Path Through the Riddles of God. How can people get it, and where can they find it?
It was published by Ignatius Press, so their website is a great way, and wherever else you get your books from, it's available everywhere.
Well, that's great. You know, I'm sorry we had such a brief or amended time today, but I'd love to have you back. This is a phenomenon that continues to go on. It's one that I've been tracking for quite a while, and I think we're going to see much, much more of it. So thanks for making time for us today, and thanks for having your baby there. Always good to hear,
hear her. You.
Is it her or him? Who was your baby girl, baby boy? All right, it's great.
It's a baby boy, yes.
That's so fantastic. Hey, thank you for being here.
Thank you very much for having me.
You guys, Derry a little. Yeah, I'm up against the clock. We're going to pray the Chaplet of Divine Mercy when we come back. If you want to join me, I'll give you the number. It's 888-914-9149. God is at work. You know, you hear her story. When you read her story, you'll see that. And I've had her on before. We'll probably bring her back to talk in much greater length. But God reaches out to all of us wherever we are, regardless of our relationships, regardless of our faith, regardless of our education. The Lord loves you intimately. That's why I think this chaplet is such a powerful gift. He wants to shower his grace and his healing and his love upon you. We'll do that together. And today's a special day. It's a day that in 1931, the Lord revealed the image of divine mercy to St. Faustina. That is an image with lots, lots of promises, just like the chaplet. It's one of these great channels of grace, as I like to call it. We'll pray the chaplet when we come back. When that's over, I'll fill you in on some great stories.